Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money that'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler,
how much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money, millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary.
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me, in a courtroom, how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, "If I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized."
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.
MSW Media.
Thanks to AG1 for supporting our show. If you want to take ownership over your health, try AG1 and you'll get a free 1-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/dailybeans. Hello, and welcome to the Daily Beans for Tuesday, April 9th, 2024. Today, Biden announces a new round of student debt relief, and it's the biggest one yet. A key Democratic group pours $186 million into the battle for the House. The Brazil Supreme Court has opened a criminal investigation into Elon Musk. Indiana just approved religious exemptions for abortion bans. RFK Jr. says his number one goal is to get Trump elected. And there are more major problems with Trump's bond in the New York Attorney General civil fraud trial. I'm Allison Gill.
And I'm Dana Goldberg.
Dude cannot come up with the cash, man.
I tell you, and literally can't come up with a cash man because no one will seem who's not sketchy as fuck seems to be able to take care of him.
Yeah. So the first thing we learned was when he filed the bond, they didn't attach their financial statements from Knight Insurance. That's the Mr. Hanky, the Christmas poo, and his subprime car loan guy, that guy from Knight Insurance. And so the court was like, "We can't take this. We need your financial statement to prove that you can back the bond." So he's like, "Okay, here it is." And then the New York Attorney General filed a thing saying he doesn't have enough cash to cover this bond. And now we're learning from the Daily Beast that the contract between Trump and this guy, the guy didn't agree to cover the $464 million. He said he, you know, well, he'll just sell some real estate. Trump can cover it. So basically he went out and got a guy to cover his bond who basically said Trump can cover it.
That's like, hysterical.
That's not
great businessman. Great businessman.
Works. Yeah. It's bizarre. And Pete and I are going to talk a lot about this and all of the stuff that's going on. There's a flurry of motions going on in the, you know, the election interference hush money case that begins here in a couple days. He wants to change the venue. He wants to get a stay on the gag order. He wants to recuse Judge Mershon.
Isn't he trying to sue him?
He's trying to sue him, just like he tried to sue Judge Engoron in the New York Attorney General civil fraud trial. All of these things. We just got a denial of a higher court to change venue. So that's not happening. All of these things will probably be denied. But again, Pete and I are going to cover all that on tomorrow's cleanup on aisle 45. The eclipse today was so much fun, by the way, Dana.
It was so cool. I saw your photo. You got a partial photo of it. I'm in New York. And so across the street at a gym that I work out in, everyone was on the rooftop. And so we went out and I didn't have any glasses and people were so sweet. And they were like, here, use these. Because I went out with my colander. Like, yeah. I don't know if a lot of people know, but if you go out with a colander, the holes in the colander work as like pinhead lenses. So when the sun comes through it, the reflection from the moon that's covering the sun, you can see all the little tiny eclipses on the it's really cool. So I did that and people were just so sweet and out and generous and enjoying it. I thought it was very cool. I mean, some people are losing their fucking minds over it, but those of us in the middle that were like, wow, this is really neat. It was a sight to see for sure.
I was watching the coverage that they had on TV of the sites of totality, like Indianapolis and Dallas and all these get-togethers and stuff. It was really emotional. It was very cool to see the whole community out there sharing something.
Yeah. And it got dark. I mean, in those places with complete totality, it definitely, you're like, wow. It's just really cool. It's a cool phenomenon. It won't happen again until 44. So a lot of people listening will be able to see a total eclipse again in their lifetime, but hopefully not Trump. Yeah. What's next?
I'll be 70. I'll be a spry 70-year-old youngster out there.
That's kind of fun.
Yeah. Well, here's what's going on with RFK Jr., right? He's now pitching Republican voters to support his independent presidential bid by saying that Kennedy will help Donald Trump defeat Joe Biden. So his whole goal now is to get Trump elected. That's what RFK Jr. is doing. They admitted it today. I think we already knew that, but, you know, quiet part out loud, et cetera, et cetera. And then Trump made a really stupid abortion announcement. I'm going to announce my abortion plan. And he got up there. He's like, it's up to the state. He basically, it's bullshit. I'm sure he still supports a national ban. He still said that people should be prosecuted and suffer consequences.
Mm-hmm. He's also very proud of the person that he's saying, I got Roe v. Wade overturned.
Yeah, he's totally saying, I did that, and that's great. And what's funny about this is that by him, like, he's lying, but by him saying that this should be up to the states, now all the super right-wing evangelicals who want a total federal abortion ban are mad at him. And then, of course, everybody else, the 87% of whatever Americans who want reproductive freedom, who were already mad at him, are still mad at him. So he just lost people today with that stupid announcement. So Trump's bond, what we were talking about, I wanted to just make sure everybody knows there's going to be a hearing on April 22nd. And it just keeps getting worse for him. So I'm really excited about that. I don't think he has the money. I don't think he can cover it. And we'll see what ends up happening. But anyway, we have tons of news to get to today. A lot of great news. Let's hit the hot notes. Hot notes. First up, from the White House. From day one, President Biden vowed to fix the federal student loan program and make sure higher education is a ticket to the middle class, not a barrier to opportunity. To date, the Biden-Harris administration has taken historic action to approve debt cancellation for 4 million borrowers, helping these borrowers get more breathing room in their daily lives, access to economic mobility, buying homes, starting businesses, and pursuing their dreams. Today, President Biden is announcing his administration's new plans that, if finalized as proposed, would provide debt relief to another 30 million borrowers, total when combined with the actions they have taken over the last 4 years. These plans would not only help create more financial stability for millions of working and middle-class families, they would also help address the disproportionate debt burden on communities of color and advance racial equity. These actions are expected to provide significant relief to Black and Latino borrowers, borrowers who attended community college, and borrowers who are financially vulnerable because they took out debt but never had the chance to complete their degrees. Not only are Black students more likely to take on student debt than their white peers, but they also end up holding nearly twice as much debt as their white peers 4 years after graduation. And Latino borrowers are also more likely to default on their student loans compared to white borrowers because of that huge high interest rate that they have. The plans President Biden is announcing today if finalized as proposed, would deliver some amount of debt relief to borrowers who owe more than they did at the start of repayment. That's like everyone I know. Millions of borrowers across the country owe more than they did when they started repaying because of accrued and capitalized interest. Black and Latino voters are likelier to experience growth in their student loan balances due to excessive interest accumulation. 4 years after graduation, Black bachelor degree borrowers have on average, owe more than they borrowed. Borrowers who are otherwise eligible for loan forgiveness but have not yet applied will get relief. Borrowers face administrative burdens with completing loan forgiveness applications. Many borrowers would receive automatic debt relief for loan forgiveness programs they're eligible for but have not successfully applied for, such as saving on the valuable education, the SAVE plan, public student loan forgiveness, and other forgiveness programs. Also, borrowers who first entered repayment many, many years ago. Lots of borrowers are repaying their loans for decades after leaving school. Biden administration's new plan would cancel debt for all borrowers with only undergraduate student debt who entered repayment 20 or more years ago, and cancel the full loan for borrowers with any graduate student debt that they first entered repayment 25 years ago or more. Now, borrowers who enrolled in low financial value programs will have their debts canceled. And it says those who attended institutions or programs that failed accountability measures or failed to provide students with sufficient financial value would be eligible for relief, including those whose institutions closed prior to the finalization of their determination. Black and Latino borrowers make up a disproportionately larger share of students enrolled in these programs, and borrowers experiencing hardship paying back their loans will get relief. And that's, he says, millions of borrowers could be eligible for relief if they're experiencing hardship in their daily lives that prevent them from fully paying back their loans now or in the future. And again, Black and Latino borrowers have higher default rates than white borrowers, undermining their ability to build generational wealth, start businesses, buy homes, and more. And that's because of the exorbitant interest rates faced by communities of color. The plans announced today would address the disproportionate debt burden on borrowers of color and other vulnerable borrowers. And they say that the plans announced today, together with the administration's past actions, will provide relief to 30 million borrowers. These plans will fully eliminate interest for 23 million people. It'll cancel the full amount of student debt for over 4 million people and provide more than 10 million borrowers with at least $5,000 in debt relief or more. With disproportionately high debt burdens, Black and Latino borrowers will get substantial benefits from this relief. So if you have a student debt relief story in the coming weeks, please send it to us, dailybeanspod.com. Click on contact.
We love to read them. Thank you, AG. This one's from the Associated Press, and I love this story. I'm glad this is happening more and more. The Indiana Court of Appeals, they gave an incremental win Thursday to a group of residents suing the state over its near total abortion ban, arguing that it violates a state law protecting religious freedom. The three-judge panel's ruling agreed with a lower court that the plaintiffs with a religious objection to the ban should be exempt from it, but written decision had no immediate effect and may be challenged in the Supreme Court within the next 45 days. Indiana's near-total abortion ban, it went into effect in August after the Indiana Supreme Court upheld it, ending a separate legal challenge. The religious challenge against the ban was brought by four residents and the group Hoosier Jews for Choice in September of 2022, saying it violates a state religious freedom law Republican lawmakers approved in 2015. A county judge sided with the residents, who are represented by the American Civil Liberties Union of Indiana, last December. That's when that happened. Indiana later appealed that decision. Well, the appeals court ordered the trial court to, quote, narrow the earlier preliminary injunction only to residents who, according to their sincerely held religious beliefs, require an abortion. The order also affirmed class certification in this case, which the state challenged. The ACLU's lawsuit argued that the ban violates Jewish teaching that, quote, a fetus attains the status of a living person only at birth, and that, quote, Jewish law stresses the necessity of protecting the life and physical mental health of the mother prior to birth, as the fetus is not yet deemed to be a person. It also cites theological teachings allowing abortion in at least some circumstances by Islamic, Episcopal, Unitarian, Universalist, and pagan faiths. So all of those have come in on this, which is beautiful. Quote, we are dealing with a very favorable decision that's not yet final. This is from Falk. He said when speaking to reporters Thursday, Indiana Attorney General Todd Rokita's office did not immediately comment on the ruling. The appeals court panel consistently sided with the residents over the state of Indiana fighting the injunction. The judges agreed with the original county judge that for the plaintiffs, obtaining an abortion when directed by their sincere religious beliefs is their exercise of religion. Quote, they also have shown their sexual and reproductive lives will continue to be restricted absent the injunction. That's what the order said. A judge heard arguments in a similar lawsuit in Missouri in November, in which 13 Christian, Jewish, and Unitarian Universalist leaders are seeking a permanent injunction barring Missouri's abortion law. The lawyers for the plaintiffs said at a court hearing that state lawmakers intended to, quote, impose their religious beliefs on everyone in the state. Three Jewish women have sued in Kentucky, claiming the state's ban violates their religious rights under the state's constitution and religious freedom law. Indiana became the first state to enact tighter abortion restrictions after the U.S. Supreme Court ended federal abortion protections by overturning Roe v. Wade in June of 2022. The near total ban makes exceptions for abortions at hospitals in cases of rape or incest, and to protect the life and physical health of the mother or if a fetus is diagnosed with a lethal anomaly. The ACLU revamped another legal challenge to the ban in November. In an amended complaint, abortion providers are seeking a preliminary injunction on the ban in order to expand medical exemptions and block the requirement that abortions must be provided at the hospital. So this is a win. And all of these states that are going around trying to ban, you know, saying religious freedom, I don't have to marry two gay people if I don't want to, religious freedom. I don't have to give medical treatment to a trans person that comes into the hospital because of religious freedom. Well, I'm happy to see that some of this in these states are actually using this bullshit. I don't want to say bullshit excuse. A lot of people do have religious beliefs that go against things, but you should not be able to make law based on them. That's why there's a separation of church and state in our country, or they're supposed to be.
They're supposed to be. Yeah, good news, though. And I was hoping that we would see a lot of these lawsuits and that they would succeed. And I hope we continue to see more of them. And I hope we expand, quote unquote, churches like Unitarian Universalism, paganism, become be a member of our church and you can have a religious
Satanism,
exemption.
By the way, is also considered a religion. So love to see what they want to do.
Church Satan.
Satan.
All right, next up from Mani Raju at CNN. House Democrats are aiming for just four more seats to win back the majority this fall. And their big spending outside group is prepared to spend more than it ever has to pick those seats up. House Majority PAC, the super PAC linked to the Democratic leader Hakeem Jeffries, is reserving $146 million in an initial round of TV ads and $40 million in digital advertising in nearly 60 media markets across the country as Democrats prepare for a battle with Republicans over the limited number of House races that will determine the next majority. The details of their ad strategy, first shared with CNN, provide the clearest roadmap yet on how Democrats view their path to the majority. We might just get it from Republicans fucking quitting. You might hold off on spending a dime on trying to flip the House. They might do it to themselves. Anyway, the group's leaders said most of their money would be focused on pickup opportunities, including in 16 districts that Joe Biden carried in 2020, now occupied by Republicans, but also the seats that Democrats have to defend, including five in districts that Donald Trump won. But the group, and remember, the House, you have to, every single House seat runs every 2 years. It's not like the Senate, where only a handful of them are up for re-election. Every single House seat, you have to run again. But the group, whose 2024 investment surpassed the $102 million initially reserved in ads in the 2022 cycle, and the $41 million in the 2020 cycle, said it was making the largest investment ever to flood key districts with an aggressive ad campaign, including attacks against Republicans on abortion and the collapse of a bipartisan border security deal. And Dana, I think we'll see a blue tsunami. I don't think it'll be close for the House this time. Yeah. The group's leader said the campaign also targets key voting blocks, such as Hispanics, Asian Americans, and Black voters, as well as swing voters put off by Trump and the chaos in the House, which, again, they're doing it to themselves. Quote, we need four seats to win back the majority. That's it. That's what Mike Smith, president of House Majority PAC, said to CNN. It's a very tough four seats. Every single one of those is going to be trench warfare. We're going to have to invest a lot of money, hence the $186 million, but there's a clear path to doing it. The number, he said, could grow as more money is spent later in the election cycle in these key races, arguing the initial investment amounts to laying down the marker. The bulk of the money will be spent to flip seats in New York and California, a path Smith said 100% represented the clearest way to the majority. But he cited other pickup opportunities in Arizona, Michigan, and even Montana for the seat held by Republican Rep. Ryan Zinke. Some ad reservations could be canceled at a later date, which party committees and candidates often do as they reassess their priorities. So don't be freaked out if they pull ad money. Of course, the mainstream media will be like, Dems are pulling ad money, shows they think they'll lose. I mean, it's they'll trust me. Don't fall for that. They go on to say, no matter what happens, Smith says the next majority is likely to be narrow, given the gerrymandered districts have created fewer swing seats in the chamber. I don't know. I think he's being maybe, I guess he's probably hedging his bets. Quote, with redistricting, it has narrowed the battlefield in terms of what it looks like, he said. I would anticipate that it'll be a relatively narrow majority. The universe has gotten smaller in terms of the most competitive seats for sure. As part of the ad buy, House Majority PAC plans to drop $18 million in the LA media market, partly aimed at GOP reps Young Kim, Michelle Steele, Ken Calvert, and Mike Garcia, while defending a seat left open by Democratic Rep. Katie Porter's decision not to run for re-election. The group reserved $4.2 million in Fresno, could be used against Reps. John Duarte and David Volato, I guess, who could be hit with another $1.7 million reserved in the market for Bakersfield. So a lot of California spending. They're also going to drop $16 million in New York City, some of which could hit Reps. Mike Lawler, Despacito, Nick LaLotta, and New Jersey's Tom Keene Jr. In upstate New York, where the group has $5 million reserved, Mark Molinaro and Brandon Williams are expected to be targeted. Bummer. Among the numerous targets, roughly $2 million is likely to knock off Rep. Jen Kiggins of Virginia, about $6 million at David Schweikert of Arizona, and about $2.5 million for Juan Siskamani of Arizona. About $2 million goes to Omaha, a sign that Rep. Don Bacon is about to be pummeled by attacks. The group has reserved $5.7 million in Philadelphia, which could target Brian Fitzpatrick and defend Democratic Rep. Susan Wild. $10 million could go after Rep. Lori Chavez de Reamer of Oregon and defend Democratic Rep. Marie Glusenkamp Perez of a nearby Washington state. So all of this money is being spent. And they say, quote, we have incredibly strong Republican incumbents in the tougher races, far better recruits, and a political environment that seems to favor Republicans. That's what Don Constan said, president of the Congressional Leadership Fund. Yeah, you're wrong, Don.
Mm-hmm.
House races are often dictated by the top of the ticket in a presidential election year. And the weakness of Trump presents a challenge. They say also the weakness of Biden presents a challenge for the Democrats. I disagree with that. In particular, Democrats in districts Trump won could be tougher, sure, but that's true in any election. But Smith said he wasn't worried about Biden's numbers, pointing to Democrats' success in recent election cycles, while contending that his presence at the top of the ticket will be value added. I agree. His approval ratings were very similar to that they were before, and we were able to outperform them. Biden's candidacy could be tricky for the five Democrats in those Trump districts, but I think it'll be okay. If we go scroll through the story, there's a whole lot of information in here, but they go on to say that one thing Democrats are prepared for is a furious Republican effort to hit them on immigration. But we saw what happened in New York with Swazi.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he ran on Trump killing the immigration border bill. So I think that that's going to be a mistake for them too. And here's one more quote from Smith. It mitigates any type of opportunity that Republicans theoretically would have had. And the fact that they refuse to take up the border bill is just basically a political gift.
Love it. And I think we talked about this before, that they went from like 40% uncontested seats to 18% uncontested, which is a beautiful thing. There's Democrats running in places they never had before because they actually feel like they have a chance to beat these Republicans in these House seats.
Yeah, or at least put somebody on the Democratic side of the ticket, particularly since Roe's been overturned.
Yeah, make them put more money there that they're not going to get because everything's going to Donald Trump. All right, last story in this section. This is from David Baylor at the Associated Press. A crusading Brazilian Supreme Court justice has included Elon Musk as a target in an ongoing investigation over the dissemination of fake news and has opened a separate investigation into the U.S. business executive for alleged obstruction. In his decision, Justice Alexandra de Moraes noted that Musk on Saturday began waging a public, quote, disinformation campaign regarding the top court's actions, and that Musk continued the following day, most notably with comments that his social media company X would cease to comply with the court's order to block certain accounts. Now, Elon, the CEO, as we know, of Tesla and SpaceX, who took over Twitter in 2022, he accused De Moraes of suppressing free speech and violating Brazil's constitution, and noted on X that users could seek to bypass any shutdown of the social media platform by using VPNs or virtual private networks. Musk will be investigated for alleged intentional criminal instrumentalization of X, formerly Twitter, as part of an investigation into a network of people known as digital militias who allegedly spread defamatory news, fake news, by the way, and threats against Supreme Court justices. That's according to the text of the decision. The new investigation will look into whether Musk engaged in obstruction, criminal organization, and incitement.
I think that's interesting, the digital militias, right? Because I always pictured people, like warehouses of people sitting in front of banks of 100 or 200 phones, you know, tweeting on behalf of Elon Musk.
Absolutely, AG. And this is a quote from the story: the flagrant conduct of obstruction of Brazilian justice, incitement of crime, the public threat of disobedience of court orders, and future lack of cooperation from the platform are facts that disrespect the sovereignty of Brazil. That was De Moraes. That's what he wrote on Sunday. X's press office did not reply to a request for comment in the Associated Press, and Musk hadn't publicly commented as of Monday morning, apart from the brief posts on X. On Saturday, Musk, as we know, a self-declared speech absolutist, said on X that the platform will lift all restrictions on blocked accounts, and predicted that the move will likely to dry up revenue in Brazil and force the company to shutter its local office. Brazil is an important market for social media companies. About 40 million Brazilians, so that's about 18% of the population, access X at least once per month. And that's according to the market research group, eMarketer. eMarketer? eMarketer. Musk later instructed, looked weird.
Yeah, I know. I'm all eMarketer? Oh, yeah. eMarketer.
eMarketer? We had one of those. Someone could write in a correction. Musk later instructed users in Brazil to download a VPN to retain access if X was shut down, and wrote that X would publish all of De Moraes' demands, claiming they violate Brazilian law. Quote, these are the most draconian demands of any country on earth. Oh. That's what X, that's what Elon Musk said. That's what he wrote later.
Twitter banned in China. Okay, whatever. Sure, buddy. Good luck with that. Criminal investigation in Brazil. You know who else was in criminal investigation in Brazil? George Santos. Remember?
That queen. Yes, I do.
All right, everybody. We have some really great good news to get to, but we have to take a quick break. So stick around. We'll be right back.
After these messages, we'll be right back.
Hey, everybody. It's important to me that the supplements I take are made of the highest quality stuff. And that's why for 3 years now, I've been drinking AG1. AG1 has an incredible in-house team of scientists. Science. Imagine that. Doctors. Nutritionists. With decades of experience in their respective fields, dedicated to ensuring that AG1 is the best nutritional supplement on the market, and it shows. My friends and family are constantly asking me if AG1 is the real deal, and trust me, there are several good reasons why I've been drinking it for as long as I have. Quality for AG1 isn't just a buzzword, it's a commitment backed by expert-led scientific research, high-quality ingredients, industry-leading manufacturing, and rigorous testing at every step of the process. They go above and beyond at AG1 to meet and beat industry standards. Now, I know I can trust what's in every scoop of AG1 because it's NSF certified for sport, which is one of the most rigorous independent quality and safety certification programs in the supplement industry. And AG1 is trusted by those experts, and that's a fact. So taking care of my health shouldn't be complicated. AG1 simplifies this by reducing the hundreds of potential different pills and capsules out there on the market into just one delicious scoop of AG1. My entire medicine cabinet full of supplements is now just my AG1. Just mix it in a glass of water every morning. It's simple and efficient, easy habit to pick up. I absolutely love it. And AG1's ingredients are heavily researched for efficacy and quality. I love that every scoop also includes folate, magnesium, and ashwagandha to help with my stress levels, on top of all of the nutritional benefits that I received by making AG1 part of my morning routine. AG1 elevates my energy levels. It gives me peace of mind because I know that one scoop I drink every morning covers all of my nutritional bases, fills all of my nutritional gaps, and it sets me up for a successful day. So AG1 has been my choice for so long, precisely because of their superior quality of their product, which I eagerly enjoy every day. So if you want to replace your multivitamin and more, start with AG1. Try AG1 and get a free one-year supply of vitamin D3, K2, and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first subscription at drinkag1.com/dailybeans. That's drinkag1.com/dailybeans. Check it out. Everybody, welcome back. It's time for the good news.
Who likes good news, everyone? Then good news, everyone.
And if you have any good news, corrections, confessions, you want to play what the mutt, find the cat, opine on the bovine, what the heck wine, what the hell is in that shell, what's the model of your axolotl, any kind of, send a photo or a drawing of any animal into us and we will guess something about it. We'll try to figure something out about it. That's the best I can do for you. Also, if you have thesis titles, dissertation titles, we're going to have a lot more student debt forgiveness stories. I have a feeling, Dana.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really stoked about that. I'm actually thinking of pitching the White House on a podcast just about student debt relief stories. I think that that would be awesome for them to do that and focus on how those programs are helping improve people's lives. It just has to be such a huge weight lifted off people's shoulders.
Oh, if you have a, I can't even imagine.
I know, right? Shout out to a loved one, self shout out to a small business in your area that could use some support. If you don't have pod pet tax to pay, you can send us an adoptable pet in your area and we'll see if we can find him a forever home. Anything at all you want to send to us, baby pictures, frog orgies, send it to us at dailybeanspod.com and click on contact. Contact? Click on contact.
You heard her. Do it.
Yep. Do it. First up, oh my God, I see toes. I see toe beans in the next submission picture.
Yeah.
I can't wait to get to it. First up from DL, pronouns he and him. Love the beans, the bean mongers, and the swears. Just a pedantic nit. Verbiage has three syllables, not verbiage. It's verbiage. Keep delivering the pro-democracy news. I have said verbiage my whole life.
Really? And, I think I actually do say verbiage. Which is
I always thought it was
strange,
like a silent thing. I looked it up and it's not even an alternate pronunciation. But you know, like we don't say village, we say village. So I think that's probably why I said
that's hysterical.
Village has an extra I in it, doesn't it? I could be way off. I need my ashwagandha. All right. Next up, Dennis, pronouns he and him. DL says, keep delivering the pro-democracy news. Thank you, DL. And then I'll do this short one from Dennis, pronouns he and him. Good morning, AG and Dana. I have a correction for a correction. If somebody already caught this and I missed it, I'm sorry. A caller from Southern Illinois recently gave a list of odd town names for the region. One of them was Benald. I believed you pronounced it Benald. That one gets an emphasis on the second half. Benald. Okay, Benald would be the best way I could describe it. It was nice to hear from another listener in flyover country. My wife and I have tickets to see the live show in St. Louis. Yeah, this summer. So we'll tell you all about the odd mispronunciation names in the city and mispronounced names in the city. My pet tax, more pictures of Squinton and Beatrix. Look at, oh.
So cute.
Look at that stance on that tuxie. That's so fantastic. I love tuxies so much, as you know. Thank you for that,
yes,
you guys.
I do. And just real quick, a live correction on the pod, as much as I love you, and that's the beginning of the compliment, there's no other I in village. It's just V-I-L-L-A-G-E.
What about marriage?
Mowage. Mowage is what?
Marriage. It is marriage.
Yeah, okay. Marriage. Marriage has another I in it, but that's a fair question. Why isn't it marriage?
Yeah. See? Yeah.
That's fair. Verbiage. All right. This is from Miss Nelson. No pronouns given. I like learning from you both. And we like learning from you, Miss Nelson. But AG, in the episode of April 1st titled, We See You, We Love You, We Fight Beside You, you interviewed Olivia Troy. In the interview, both of you disparage state and county fairs and the people at them. The next time a fair is in your area, attend. Notice the effort and pride the exhibitors have in raising animals, growing plants, handcrafts, and variety of other skills. Notice the attendees who are there to appreciate the efforts and to learn. Notice the work put in by wood vendors, ride operators, and game operators, etc. Or for example, carnies is what they call the ride operators. Behind the scenes are the staff, paid and volunteer, who keep everything running. The disparagement is all the more jarring because the same episode you spoke about people fighting alongside the LGBTQ plus community, which meant you felt comfortable insulting this group of people while defending that group of people. Please don't gratuitously insult any group of people, especially when you use them as a stand-in for the group you do not want to call out. In related veins, I do appreciate that you and DG have stopped deliberately mispronouncing names or giving nicknames to Republicans. It is the name that they have chosen to go by and shouldn't be altered. I also appreciate that you have stopped using diaper wearing as an insult. Using it says not just the one person, but all those who wear diapers are incompetent. And sure, you never meant that. I will continue listening and learning.
Ah, thanks, Ms. Nelson. Yeah, no, you're right. And I think the problem, at least for me, I can't speak for Olivia, she's not here, is that as comedians, we all have to sort of rely on tropes, you know? And it's hard. It's a hard habit to break, and I'm working on it. But I do. I go to the fair all the time. I go to the Del Mar County Fair. It used to be the state fair. Now it's the Del Mar County Fair. Go there all the time. I love to go and see the chickens. I have a thing for chickens, as you know. So I'm glad that you recognize that it's not intentional. And I will think more about that when I talk about stuff like that. So I appreciate that. Next up, from Hai Ting, pronouns she and they. Hello, bean deities. Nice. I've been listening since the kitchen table days, and it's amazing to watch the expansion of the beautiful MSW empire. What a wonderful force for good in the world. Thank you. Back in 2020, I shared the good news about Astronautica. I remember this. Voices of Women in Space, my project for a vocal trio, which was produced by Voices of Ascension, a professional chorus and orchestra in New York City. Since then, Voices has made me curator of the initiative called Voices of the New. I have used this opportunity to create a space for our own version of diversity, equity, and inclusion in classical singing. We bring together a chamber choir or small ensemble of singers from many backgrounds and create concerts by programming, rehearsing, and performing in a collaborative way that aims to elevate each of our voices within the collective whole. It's like choral democracy. And at the moment, it's much more satisfying than political democracy. Very true. If this message makes it to the good news for Tuesday, April 9th, then I hope some of the New York City area Leguminati will consider coming to Roulette in Brooklyn for our concert tonight. For everyone else, or if this message is too late, the concert will be live streamed and should be available for a few days. We'll have a link in the show notes. As pet tax, I give you the notorious Igwe, who, sadly, crossed the Rainbow Bridge in January. AG once said she had a man cat face, and I never corrected it. Maybe Igwe? Identified as non-binary, but how could we ever know? AG and Dana, you both continue to be an inspiration to all of us. Thanks for everything you do. And look at that girl cat. Oh,
what a beautiful kitty.
So great. Thanks, Hai Ting. Yeah, everybody, concert tonight, April 9th, New York City, Roulette in Brooklyn. Go check it out.
All right. This is from Eric. No pronouns given. Hi, AG and DG. Writing back to agree 1000% with Irene from Monday's Good News. I just want to clarify that when I say moose is offended by bananas, I don't mean scared. He often shows interest in the food I'm eating, and I usually let him have a sniff to see what he likes. The first time he smelled banana, his reaction was the most amusing. He gave it a clear look for feline disgust and then promptly left the room. Every time he smells banana now, he takes his leave. I've tried this with other foods with different reactions to each. I started posting moose versus food reels on Instagram because I thought it was cute. Note, I only offer sniffs of food that is cat safe in case he decides to steal a bite. I do not advocate feeding cats human food. Thank you for the fantastic
Eric
show.
Eric is ready for the emails.
Eric is ready. He's like, I don't do this and I have not done that. And I want to be very clear. Do not email me. Thank you for the fantastic show, for the good news segment. And thank you to Irene for advocating for cats to feel safe in their homes. Pictures of moose reacting to banana and celery. It was neutral on celery. And Eric, I love that you wrote in. I think I was the one that actually said, I I regurgitated something that I had seen about cats being afraid of bananas, and they were correcting me to not perpetuate that myth. And so I love that you wrote back in explaining all of this. I'm not sure. I love that you did. And I also love that you were like, so get off my dick because I'm not doing all these other things.
Well, not the myth. I mean, they actually are terrified because they think they're snakes.
Right. And yeah, that's fair.
Advocate for that, right? Which we do not.
Absolutely not. I don't advocate for scaring any animals or people. I don't like when people scare people either. I don't think it's very nice at all.
No, it's not very nice. And tickling, can we stop that? It's awful. I think it's non-consensual. I disagree with it. And I freak out when people tickle me. I really do. Next up from Anonymous, I don't know how Trumpy my new neighbors will be. No pronouns. Hello, Beans Queens. This lifelong Democrat and years-long Beans patron will be relocating from reliably blue New Mexico to swing state Wisconsin. I'll be registered to vote in plenty of time to poop on Trump, where it will help Joe more.
So
looking forward to it for me to poop on. Thank you. And I'll just go ahead and grab this last one here from Janelle. This is Janelle, she and her. Greetings to the Queens of the Beans, a longtime listener. Not quite the kitchen table days, but I did eventually go back and listen to every single episode. Oh, wow. Thank you, Janelle. Huge thanks to you, your team, this amazing community for helping keep me afloat in this sea of lunacy. Confession, I've learned the hard way to not do my makeup until after the good news, as nearly every day I end up in tears of some form. On Friday, Dustin's good news led me down memory lane as a Navy hospital corpsman. Core person, I had the good fortune of being stationed at Naval Hospital San Diego and then Naval Hospital Camp Pendleton. Soon after reporting to Pendleton, I was lucky enough to be allowed to move off base. This meant no more skanky roomies, and more importantly, I could get a dog. So off to the Humane Society, where I met my boy Junior. This little dude was around 6 months old and had been there for quite some time. Pretty sure he was past his expiration date, but the folks at the Humane Society kept coming up with reasons to keep him around. He was even featured in a commercial for the Humane Society that aired soon after I adopted him. He was the bestest boy, roommate, and travel companion a girl could ever ask for. He rode shotgun in the back to the East Coast when I got off active duty, as well as everywhere else we went, and very reluctantly shared me when I met my partner at almost 30 years old. Sadly, I lost Junior to kidney failure when he was around 6 years old. He's always lived in my heart, and I thank whoever's out there that the folks at the San Diego Humane Society knew how special he was. Pod Pet Tax is Junior at home in Pennsylvania. HS had some thoughts on his breeds. What say you? Included, that's the Humane Society, included are my grand puppies from left to right, Reese, Olivia, and Van. Breed fairly obvious. And of course, my ridiculous Shih Tzu, Ollie, doing what he does best. Oh my gosh.
No.
All right. So there's definitely schnauzer in there.
Yeah. We're looking at the middle one, right?
Yeah. The one with the shag carpet there.
Yeah.
Husky schnauzer?
Oh my God, could you imagine how cute that would be? But I don't think you're wrong.
It's adorable. All right, let's see what they've got here. They've got wire-haired fox terrier and mini schnauzer. All right, we got the schnauzer.
All right.
I'll take it. 50% is an F, but fuck. It's better than zero. That's all I gotta say. Thank you all for sending in your wonderful corrections and Pod Pet Tax and your stories. I appreciate it all. Send it to us at dailybeanspod.com and click on contact. Thanks for helping us be better as well. We appreciate that very much, as you know. Do you have any final thoughts, Dana? We're coming up on your birthday.
I know. I guess my final thought for today is, if you're joining this podcast and you haven't heard this part, I'm having a show in Fort Lauderdale on Friday. If you haven't gotten your tickets, they're still available on my website. You can go to danagoldberg.com, go to appearances, and it's the first one on there. Just click on that and get tickets. And if you go to the show, just hang out afterward. I'm going to come out and take some pictures and do a meet and greet. Don't even have to pay extra for it. Although if it's my birthday, if you want to send me a drink, you can do it over Venmo.
Hell yeah.
So just, yeah, why not? Come to the show. I hope you can make it in Southern Florida on April 12th. And I'm excited.
Be the best birthday gift ever. And, let me be clear here. This is over an hour of pure fucking Dana Goldberg.
That's it. Okay. For those of you that have been to the show, you know, if you saw me at Winter Pride Fest, and I know a bunch of you went to that, you know, you get 45 an hour of me. Boom, let's do this.
Mm-hmm. That's not the same as hearing her on the beans. So go get that full hour plus of awesomeness. All right, my birthday friend. Let's get out of here. Are we going to be back? You're here tomorrow? I can't remember.
I am.
All right, sweet. Yep. We'll be back in your ears tomorrow. And remember, there's also a new episode of Clean Up on Aisle 45 tomorrow that you don't want to miss. And don't miss the new episode of Jack that came out on Sunday. Till tomorrow, please take care of yourselves. Take care of each other. Take care of the planet. Take care of your family. Take care of your mental health. Vote blue over Q.
And please talk all your family with you.
Take them all with you, even though I got the things out of order this time.
And I don't know what I said about taking them. So that's fine.
It's what she said, as Dana says, as you say. I've been AG.
And I've been DG.
But you don't say you've been AG. I say I've been AG. That didn't make any sense.
That's I've been DG. We've lost the episode, people.
This has been a really fun sign-off, I gotta say, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow. Dems the beans.
The Daily Beans is written and executive produced by Allison Gill, with additional research and reporting by Dana Goldberg. Sound design and editing is by Desiree McFarlane, with art and web design by Joelle Reeder with Moxie Design Studios. Music for The Daily Beans is written and performed by They Might Be Giants, and the show is a proud member of the MSW Media Network, a collection of creator-owned podcasts dedicated to news, politics, and justice. For more information, please visit mswmedia.com.
MSW Media.
Hi, this is John Cryer, and I am hosting a new 7-part true crime podcast called Lawyers, Guns, and Money. That'll challenge everything you think you know about U.S. covert operations and presidential misconduct. From Jack Bryan, the director of American PSYOP, comes the incredible true story of John Mattis, a newly sworn-in Miami public defender in the 1980s who has found himself completely in over his head.
I step off the plane, and there is a van with a couple guys with Uzis. And one of them in broken English said, "Welcome to Bogota, John."
Mattis's first felony defendant has been arrested for having a machine gun and tells Mattis a dangerous secret.
He was shipping arms into Central America on behalf of the CIA. As a first-time lawyer, I want to act like I know what I'm doing.
But with the help of a Colombian drug smuggler...
How much money the CIA raised by hitting up drug dealers?
A lot of money. Millions of dollars.
An Alabama mercenary...
They were prepared to die to the last man. I saw this in them. I saw the fire in their eyes. And they made me their war chief.
And a newly elected senator, John Kerry.
We are looking at allegations of drug running, gun smuggling, conspiracy to commit murder and murder itself.
He'll fight to free his client.
The judge said, "Show me in a courtroom how we were at war."
Expose an illegal war being run by the White House.
I mean, I wanted him involved, but I didn't want to be on record as doing it.
And somehow stay alive in the process.
I just escaped a kidnapping by the CIA in Costa Rica.
This is Lawyers, Guns, and Money.
So you have a man in an Armani suit standing on the bow of a boat with a rocket launcher and says, "If I lose sight of you, I will launch. You will be vaporized."
Available everywhere starting October 29th, or get it ad-free and early starting October 22nd at lawyersgunsandmoney.supercast.com. There you'll find bonus episodes along with exclusive content. Subscribe now.